5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with another amazing Croc podcast. I use the word amazing not because I'm amazing, but because you are amazing. Alongside me to help with this podcast, as always, Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, you're looking beautiful today. You got rocking a new hairstyle, rocking a clean face. What is it? You don't look like a gang member anymore.
Yeah, this is what we call clean shaven, relaxed. The sun is out. The snow is melted. It is another episode of the Croc Podcast.
Yeah, I have to say, this week does feel like spring wants to sprung, as they say. So, Angel, I was doing some thinking, and as always, you know, I'm always trying to, you know, sometimes with these podcasts for our survivor slash thrivers, I already have a good idea of what I want to do a week before, 2 weeks before. We're working on a different sort of, you know, maybe a series of podcasts, or we call them a module of a certain topic. And sometimes something just comes to my mind at the last minute, and that's what today's podcast is all about, just a last minute inspiration. And it really derived from me thinking about my childhood and my family and the crazy Italian American family that I grew up in. And I was thinking, wow, what a bunch of wonderful, loving people. But boy, they were nosy and they were controlling and they were judgmental. And boy, it sure messed me up, you know, even to this day. I'm sure you could understand from your background as well.
Absolutely, my friend. You're bringing back memories.
So I was thinking to myself, my gosh, if I had a hard time individuating, which is a fancy word for like becoming sort of self-sufficient, which never did happen, by the way, imagine how a person must feel as a cancer survivor slash thriver. About when they get their diagnosis, having to make decisions and how to do that and remain and retain their autonomy. I was just thinking that even after, you know, I got older, got my degree, started working, got married, had kids, I even felt that the pressure from my family actually increased rather than decreased. And I felt that it took, and sadly, and I'm happy that my mom lived a long life, but it wasn't until she left us that I really started to finally feel a little autonomous. And I'm thinking to myself, imagine, you know, having this overly protective, reactive family and how I responded to that. I think that I'm even so right now, even to this day at age going on 64, I even feel that if someone even sniffs wanting to tell me what to do, I'll do the exact opposite, even if it's not good for me, because I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Do you kind of get the same kind of feeling?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and I said this before, but I'll say it again. And I said to myself, imagine what a cancer survivor thriver must have to go through as it relates to becoming autonomous and able to make their own decisions about, not just about healthcare, Angel, but about their own personal decisions, about their survivorship, thrivership decisions, and all that comes with it. So thus the podcast. And I want to say that it all starts with the impact of the cancer diagnosis. And let's be honest, that impact is nothing short of nuclear. It's like a nuclear bomb explodes in your life. And the first thing that happens is there's that misconception that everyone that's not in the cancer game goes through, and that's the misconception that cancer will kill you no matter what. And that's absolutely not true. Cancer is not a death sentence. Instead, it's a treatable condition. And we've devoted now 3 years of podcasts to try to help our survivor thrivers know that. There's also the fear of the family members. There's the fear that your loved ones have of losing you. And this then becomes a feeling of helplessness, a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling of uselessness. Imagine that's a very powerful word, that your family because they're not the ones with the diagnosis. They don't know what to do. And it's very powerful. And as such, not only do they not give you the space that you may need, that space becomes even tighter and tighter and tighter. And you almost feel like you're, you know, that you have no autonomy. So as a result, all of a sudden, with all these feelings and all of these different, you know, visceral, you know, relationships that are going on, everyone all of a sudden becomes, you know, an expert, right? So all of a sudden, everyone from your parents to your partner, to your kids, to your family, to your friends, to your coworkers, even to your neighbors, to your acquaintances, to your hairdresser, you kind of get my point. Suddenly everyone becomes a cancer expert overnight. Presto, voila, abracadabra, you have all these people telling you what to do, and that's the last thing you need. So that leaves you having to deal with your cancer and making sure your support system feels safe and secure and has agency over your decisions and those decisions that affect you, the survivor thriver. So that's going to be what we're going to be talking about today. Let's begin by taking a step backward before we move forward. So just like in my case, you know, my loving but dysfunctional family, my Italian-American upbringing, you have a history with your loved ones. Hopefully it's better than what mine was. Hopefully it's a healthy model. Hopefully it's a better model. Hopefully it's ideal, where everyone is respectful of each other, is there for you, but gives you the space, knows when to step back, and comes in when needed. They realize that no one could become a cancer expert just by reading a few Good Housekeeping articles or watching a few YouTube videos. But if you don't happen to have that type of relationship and you have one that I had, or even worse, what will you do in order to try to keep your autonomy and keep your sanity while you're trying to fight your cancer? So the first step is to figure out what you're bringing to the table. Angel, do you know what the difference is between the 5 minutes before a survivor thriver is diagnosed with cancer and the 5 minutes after their diagnosis?
I would say the fear of the unknown.
No, the answer is 10 minutes. There is absolutely nothing different between the person before the diagnosis and the person after the diagnosis. So despite the fact that this huge event, this huge blow, this huge 800-pound gorilla in the room just appears, you're the same person you were before you got your cancer. So maybe you were like me and you didn't know how to politely or appropriately or non-reactively set loving boundaries with your people. Maybe you didn't know how to be independent without hurting someone's feelings. Maybe you were like me and you didn't know how not to let those tantrums and those quivering lips and the hostility and the ignore tactics, when people wouldn't be talking to me because they were pissed off at, you know, whatever decision I made that they weren't involved in. I used to let it bother me. So I would give in and allow myself to be dominated. Maybe you were playing your part and you were a detached observer to the events of your life. Maybe you allowed and even needed someone to guide you and direct you through your life's journey. That's possible too. But the good news, Angel, is that regardless of your past is past. Cancer has now reset the game clock. It's given you a blank slate to create the being you have always wanted to be. And that being is a capable, resilient, intelligent advocate for steering life to where you want it to go. And Angel, everyone's going to be asking, but Doc, how am I going to do that? Well, Angel, we don't just mention issues. We don't just point to the problems. We try to give answers. So here's how it's going to go. Number one, and most importantly, you need to be a responsible and knowledgeable patient and be a self-advocate. Say you have stage 1 breast cancer. you need to know everything you can about being a stage one breast cancer survivor. Same goes for any type of cancer, any stage of cancer, with the incorporation of what your current health situation is. You might have diabetes, you might have high blood pressure, you might have coronary artery disease, and now all of a sudden you have cancer. You have to know the landscape of your health, and you have to take control of it, and you have to take grasp of it, and you have to have agency, or else if everyone sees that you're not controlling that, no one's going to leave you alone. So the first thing is to be your own advocate and to know everything about your health, especially about your cancer. You need to use your good judgment or get good at looking at red flags as it relates to finding your healthcare team. There's going to be certain doctors and nurses you connect with, and there's going to be certain doctors and nurses that you don't connect with. Make sure you, when you go into an office, how long have you waited? Have you felt like a human being? Have people been kind to you? Have they been reassuring? Have they been gentle? Have they been compassionate? Have they been empathetic? Do they not look at you? Do they only look at their computer? Do they not remember who you are after your first appointment? Do they not read your chart? Do they not know what's going on or why you're there? You want to make sure you take all of the things that Angel and I have been teaching you over the last 3 years, and you need to put all of this advice into action, and you have to be the person that picks your team, and it's got to be the right fit for you. You need to listen to some of the old podcasts. We have dozens and dozens that can help you in this regard. Number three, network, network, network. Create your survivor thriver network. Be circumspect and picky. As with family, there are plenty of cancer support, so-called experts who are not only not experts, but they are wrongly opinionated, they're biased, and sadly, there are even some that prey on the vulnerable. I remember when we were in the CROC organization going through the period when we were overseeing the CROC grants to the survivors, there was a woman named Jackie who used to come to me every year and bring her daughter, her little daughter with her, and bring in the application. And she would, the waterworks would start the minute she walked in the door. And she always had some kind of a sad tale about what life was dishing out at her, and how awful and terrible her cancer was, and how her daughter was going to be motherless. And I felt so terrible for her. I just kept on giving her checks year and year and year in and year out. She'd get a check until finally someone said, you know, are you doing your due diligence? Are you, you know, checking out the background of these people? And when Jackie came in the next year, I said, Jackie, I'm sorry to do this to you. I know we know each other for many years, but I need to talk to your oncologist. I just have to, vet your application. That's the last time I ever saw Jackie again. She never came back. That was it. This lady took us for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, was not a cancer survivor. So be careful. They're out there. Do not be afraid or ashamed to ask questions. Get references, do your digging. The more someone protests, the more somebody starts arguing with you, the more you can be sure that that person is a fake. So be picky and be circumspect when you're creating your networks. Make a life chart to navigate your cancer. You put cancer in the middle of this big piece of paper, you know, one of those big, what would you say, project management papers. And then you put all of the different hubs of your life. You have your health, of course, is first, but cancer also affects your finances. It affects your professional life. It affects your relationships. It affects your spirituality. It affects you emotionally. Put into action a plan with the right support structure to survive the storm. Now, Angel, and only now, are you ready to face your peanut gallery, your support system. So the first thing you guys are going to do is you're going to do what's called an inverse or reverse intervention. You guys have heard of an intervention when everybody kind of just shows up and kind of rabbit punches you. You kind of think everyone's there for dinner, and then all of a sudden there's no food and everyone's sitting in a circle and you're in the middle, and they're there to tell you about your drinking, or they're to tell you about what you're doing to ruin your life. But now it's your turn to turn the tables on them. You're going to do a reverse intervention. It's your chance to utilize your support team as only you see fit. So you may have an unusually healthy dyad where you have a great relationship with your support system and everybody is appropriate and everybody is respectful. And if so, God bless you. It might just take a quick huddle just to tell them where your head's at. And that might be enough. Just kind of tell them where you're at, what you're expecting, what you've done so far, and what your plan is. And it may be the end. That might be the only thing you need to do. Or you may be like me, and that may not be the case. And this is where I always fail. I never figured out how to be gentle, understanding, and loving. I always was defensive, and I was always reactive. How they behave will be the same as they've always behaved. They're always going to be the same, and they're expecting you to be the same. But the big surprise is you are not the same. You are a new you. You have changed. You have taken life, and you have become not just, you know, an observer. You have become an active participant in your life and in your survivorship and in your thrivership. And they're not going to expect that. You're going to be very, very foreign to them. And you need to be very cognizant of that. And you have to be very, very understanding that they don't really know the new you yet. So we're going to put together some essential strategies. I call the first part the nuts and bolts. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to inform everybody of what's going on. Guys, I just wanted to sit you down and let you know. I felt a lump in my breast. I went to my doctor, got a mammogram, got a biopsy. I got breast cancer. That's the bad news. The good news is it's contained. It's a stage one. I need to have this thing cut out. Then I need to get some radiation. And then I have to take some hormone pills for 5 years. My doctors are Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones and Dr. Jackson. They're in the local cancer center. I trust them. They're very educated. They have a lot of experience. I don't feel I need a second opinion. I feel that I have the right people taking care of me. Number two, you need to educate them. Educate them on what breast cancer is, because they didn't hear the word breast. They heard the word cancer. So you need to tell them that cancer is not what we all thought it was. Cancer is a disease like so many other diseases. Cancer is not going to be something that's going to take your life away. Cancer is going to be like getting a diagnosis of high blood pressure or diabetes, and you're going to deal with it with the right people, and you're going to deal with it with the right medications and the right interventions. Number three, you need to reassure them. You have to make sure that they know that you have it in your grasp, that you have control over it, that you have absolute command over your diagnosis, and you have a plan put in place. You don't need to hear about stories of people they know, or a cousin's, brother's, sister's, babysitter's, goddaughter's, dog sitter, went to this doctor who cured them and blah, blah, blah. You don't need any of that. And you just have to reassure them that you got this. The second part, wine and cheese. You have to commit and recommit to your family members, to your support system. You have to let them know that even though you're taking agency over your life and your decisions, that doesn't mean that you're not committed to them, that you don't love them, that you don't care about them. This is not an insult. This is not a degrading situation. They're not taking a pay cut. You're not firing them. You're actually even more committed to them by taking control of your life, by taking control of your health. You're actually being healthier for yourself, which will make you a better family member to them. And the fact that you have feelings for them and that you love them and you care about them, that has not changed. just because you got cancer, and you may not need to have them involved in every decision as it relates to your cancer. And then you have to ease their burden. We talked about them feeling in despair or helpless or hopeless or useless. And I use that word a second time, useless, because that's how they're feeling. And I want you to tell them that you know what they're going through, and you could only imagine how they feel, but not to feel that way. That if you need them, you will let them know, but you will let them know under the rules and boundaries that you set forth. So remember, it is, you will tell them, I love you, I adore you, but it's not about you, it's about me. Sometimes I'm going to be too tired to talk. Sometimes I'm going to have a bad day. Sometimes I'm going to feel down. I may need you, or I may need to be left alone. Do not take it personally. Bringing me food when I'm nauseous after chemotherapy, or I'm after treatment 20 of head and neck radiation and everything tastes like cardboard, or I can't swallow, that not only will not be helpful, that will be hurtful. It's not a good thing. I may not be able to host Christmas this year. I may not be able to come to Christmas this year. I may need to skip a holiday. It's okay. These, you set your rules and your boundaries as you see fit. Delegate and triage. Use your talent. Use the strengths of the people around you. Use the talents of your support system, of your family members. We had a family, well, we always had our Aunt Marita, who was always there for everything, but we also had a family friend. Her name was Michelle. And if there was a death, if there was a tragedy, if there was an issue, I may not have seen Michelle for months, but Michelle would appear. She wouldn't say a word while everyone was grieving. She put out the food. She cleaned up the house. She made sure all everything was done properly, that everybody got taken care of, and that all of the important decisions that needed to be made were made with the people that needed to make them. And when things were stable, she would disappear. If you have a Michelle in your life, use her, delegate to her. You also need to be a spin doctor. There might be people in your life that may not be helpful to you right now during the initial onslaught of information and onslaught of doctor's appointments and onslaught of stress and toxic treatments. But be a diplomat. You will say to them, you know, Joe, I love you. I don't need you right now, but I will need you in the future. I may need you to take me to the city for an appointment. I may need you to go shopping for me. I may need you to watch the dogs if I'm in the hospital because my blood counts have gone low. I don't know when I'm going to need you, but when I need you, be ready. And last but not least, do a, what I call a toxiectomy. Angel, you know what a toxiectomy is?
No, but it doesn't sound, it sounds a little painful.
It's actually the opposite. Let's be honest, Angel. We all have toxic people in our lives. How they get there, the reasons are myriad. There's a million reasons why we have toxic people in our lives. This is not the podcast to explain that. How many toxic people in our lives are generally a reflection of our mental stability and our self-esteem. But no matter what the reason is or how many toxic people you have in your life, now is your chance to clean house. Cancer is the perfect instigator and motivator to remove all that is bad in your life and replace it with all that is good, all that is healing, all that is soothing, and all that is peaceful. So to my cancer survivor thrivers out there, I know what you're going through in the sense that I see it play out every day. I see people being overwhelmed and overpowered by this, their support systems. I see the absolute pain that you have trying to get autonomy over your life. You're overwhelmed. You want to make your decisions. You want to be your own advocate, and you need ways on how to make that happen. I'm hopeful that Angel and I provided you those answers. Angel, you always get the last word on the podcast.
You know, as I'm holding my son in my arms, I'm, you know, you can't help but think about, you know, your surroundings and your environment. And we can't even begin to imagine what the cancer survivors and thrivers are going through. But one thing is for sure, that as you stated earlier, don't change who you are. The diagnosis and the treatments may change the direction of what you didn't plan on having, but the path that you are leading is righteous. Righteous in the sense of you will prevail. You will not fail. The doctors that are with you will help you succeed. But more importantly, allow your family to be the biggest support factors that you can have. Even when you don't want them there, know that they're always by your side. They may not just be right next to your side.
Angel, thank you so much. And as you said, they are there, but make sure that they know where you need them and when you need them. I want to take a minute and thank Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, as I see him holding his son, comforting his young son, it's just a symbol of the great man that he is. If you guys ever need any spiritual uplifting, Have Faith, Let It Begin, a daily podcast, Monday through Friday. It's on every platform. Give them a listen. You'll chuckle, you'll cry, you'll laugh, you'll pray, you'll feel a lot better. Rod Freeman, looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, my friend. Hope all is well. Small biz up for any of our survivors who might need some advice on their little side gig or their little second interest or websites or whatever. Give Rod a call. It's on our website. Board of Directors, thank you for your talents, for helping our survivor thrivers. John Benzea, Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, thank you for your support of our program. And last but not least, our quick pep talk. You guys have been diagnosed, and basically that nuclear explosion has happened. You're trying to just get yourself together from the diagnosis and trying to figure it out. The last thing you need is to have a gaggle of people trying to drown you or overwhelm you or overpower you. You are a self-contained, worthy, intelligent, and very competent human life form who can make their own decisions, who could do their own research, who can pick and choose what they need and who they need to help them through these decisions and through their survivorship, through their thrivership. You guys are worthy. You guys are courageous. You guys are why we get up in the morning to do these podcasts, to help you get through and help you direct yourselves in a very healthy and productive way. And I will end this podcast as I end every podcast, and that's with a prayer and a blessing, wishing each of you a very long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.